there are two sort of periods of holy days for the Baha'is. One, which is just past, is the first day of the Baha'i year. Baha'is call it Nowruz. And Nowruz in Persian actually means new day. And it's the beginning not only of for Baha'is of the new year, but it's also the traditional beginning of the new year for Iran's, for Iran and all Iranians, and going back far enough for the Zoroastrians, which the Zoroastrian faith is the ancient religion of Iran. And that holy day for Baha'is and Iranians in general falls on the 21st of March. And Baha'is celebrate it in various ways. It also marks the end of our fasting period because Baha'is have a fast that involves abstaining from food, drink, and tobacco from sunrise until sunset from March 2nd through March 20th. It's a rather the Baha'i equivalent of Lent, you might say, though it fell earlier this year than the Christian Lent. The other period of time for Baha'is, for holy days, is coming up, and this is what we call the Festival of Rezvan. Rezvan is an Arabic word that means paradise, and it refers to the 12 days Baha'u'llah moved to a garden outside the city of Baghdad in April of 1863. This was called the Garden of Rezvan. And on the first day of Rezvan, Baha'u'llah gathered his followers together in this garden on the island, and he said that he was the promised one that God had sent to humanity, that he was a new divine messenger. And so this announcement that Baha'u'llah made to his followers, which was apparently an incredibly overwhelming announcement, we have very few historical records of what that announcement was like. And one person I know who thinks his great-grandfather was there says every time they asked his great-grandfather what happened on the first day of Rezvan, his great-grandfather would just start trembling and wouldn't be able to answer the question. It's really quite an interesting story. So on the first day of Rezvan, Baha'u'llah announced to his followers that he was this new divine messenger that they were expecting. And so it's the great holy day for Baha'is for the whole year, the first day of Rezvan, April 21st. I should add something else about Rezvan, that there are 12 days in the festival of Rezvan because Baha'u'llah stayed on the island of Rezvan. This is an island in the middle of the Tigris River, which was a garden. And he was there for 12 days. And the first, ninth, and 12th days are particularly significant for Baha'is. Those 3 days are holy days on which Baha'is are supposed to suspend all work. And the 9th and 12th days of Rezvan were respectively the time his family were able to join him on the island, and the 12th day was when he was able finally to leave the island, and the family and followers, of course, also left the island on the 12th day of Rezvan. This period of time, and I think if you look at religious holidays and festivals around the world, one thing one notices is that frequently holidays fall in either the spring or the fall. And they have a lot to do with the agricultural cycles often, time for planting, the time for harvesting, or times for people to celebrate. There are different ways, I think, of classifying holy days. One way of classifying them, it would be into sort of joyous ones and somber ones. And generally, the somber ones involve remembering someone's passing. For Baha'is, for example, you have the commemoration of the ascension of Baha'u'llah, the passing of Baha'u'llah. For Christians, Easter, Good Friday would be the somber holiday because it's the remembrance of the crucifixion. For Jews, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is similarly a kind of somber holiday. The other kind, of course, are the joyous ones, and Christmas for Christians is joyous. For Baha'is, the New Year that I mentioned earlier is joyous. So usually you can divide the holidays that way. Almost all of the traditions on the earth aim to give you some sort of connection with the divine. And even Buddhism, which perhaps is the least God-centered of the major religions, even it is a tradition which helps you to come in contact with something profound and deep within you. So all the traditions make some sort of effort to give you a connection. And I think when one studies the different traditions, one can learn an enormous amount about how your own religion teaches you about making that connection by looking at the other religions' teachings about how to make the connection. To me, that's one of the exciting things about studying the different world religions, is you learn so much more about your own religious tradition. The man who is often considered the founder of the field of comparative religion, or the science of the study of religion, as sometimes people call it, it was a man named Max Müller, lived about 100 years ago. And Max Müller once said, "He who knows one religion knows no religions." If you want to really understand your own religious tradition, it helps enormously to know other traditions. And then you get interested in the questions the other traditions ask and the answers they give, and you learn more about the questions your own tradition asks and the answers it gives. Well, I think when one studies them all, one sees certain eternal or ultimate connections between them. They differ in enormous numbers of details. There's no question about that. Hinduism focuses on Krishna. Christianity focuses on Jesus. And the lives of those two individuals are very different. And the way they talk about the divine is very different. Krishna is considered to be the incarnation of a god, Vishnu, and that's one god out of hundreds of millions. Christianity is not polytheistic, it's monotheistic. So those are very different about those two religious traditions. But nevertheless, they both connect you to the divine. And that, to me, is part of that unity that you see in them. Another thing about them that I think you see very clearly when you study all the traditions is what people often call the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that particular rule is found in every religion in the world. It's phrased differently, but you will find it in the scriptures pretty much of every tradition. And I know of someone who's actually created a little 8.5 by 11 sized piece of paper with all the quotations from the different scriptures of the world with that particular golden rule. Now, the golden rule may not seem like a particularly important starting point for finding commonalities among the traditions, but if you think about the golden rule as the basis of ethics, one of the things you very quickly realize is that it's pretty much the basis of most of the ethics of the different societies we have here in the world, because from it flows thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's spouse. Most of these other concrete and specific ethical exhortations come from that golden rule. And so that particular commonality that the religious traditions share really means that they share an enormous body of ethics, an enormous body of attitudes towards people. And that I find very exciting and very encouraging, especially for the future of humanity, because it means we have something we can all build on together.